Due to a technical issue in this episode, some of the audio of me speaking has been cut out due to the microphone not working. Sorry for any inconvenience in this episode.
Hi. How's it going? Well, I work in augmented and virtual reality, and I am also a spiritual practitioner. A student of Kabbalah and other metaphysical practices. And I live in Portugal. We do lots of events here. I mean, there's lots of things that I can share. It really depends on what you would find relevant and interesting for your readership. Well, viewership. But right now, I'm scanning something called a Siddur. This is a Siddur. So a Siddur is a book of different connections. Jewish people use a Siddur every day. It's their way of meditating, and they meditate on different prayers. And there's different ways of connecting, right? If you're someone who's very much in the mind, then your journey is going to be through the unraveling of mind, unraveling of the personal identity and stories that you are kind of contained in, which is your perceptual sensorial reality. And if you're someone who's more experience-led, you're going to be more tuned into the experience of these different connections. Now the connections kind of operate a bit like a scaffolding of interdimensional, and when I say interdimensional, it's just more expanded states of experiencing light. And light is life. Right, like everything that we infuse light into life, and that's what kind of nourishes us. That's what gives us a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. What we're searching for, from as I understand it, is light, and we look for light in everything. So light we live in a physical dimension. This is the physical world, the world of the senses. And in the physical world, everything is, it's a nice analogy of the moon and the sun. The moon is reflects the light, right? This dimension reflects light. And therefore, we want to reflect as much light as possible from source, which would be the sun. So there are tools that help us really channel and connect to the light. And what is the aspect of us that really receives light, that connects to the soul. So the more tuned into our soul, our truth, our inner nature, the more we're able to receive this light and reflect it through our being, our essence. And we become like radiators of light, essentially. So we want to be kind of radiating light and sharing light in all aspects of our life. And there's a technology to it. And that technology, when we understand the relationship, and ultimately technology is really about, it's the most direct way is to love everyone as you love yourself. And that's like, it's the second commandment, actually. And it's very interesting when you think about the commandments, which when we really study the old texts, the commandments were never commandments. Nothing has ever been commanded from source. They're just utterances, they're expressions. The mind distorts information to say something that's shared has been told. And again, it's like that we are very caught up in interpretations of text to try and connect back to source, which is a process of mind, which is something that exists within a state of duality, separation, separate. The Kabbalists talk about 10 dimensions. 10 dimensions from Malchut, the physical world, which is where we are currently existing in our physicality, to Keter, the crown, similar to the chakras, right? So you've got the root, which is the floor, which is, and then you've got the crown, which is this connection to source. And if we bring all of these aspects of ourselves into an alignment, we become pure conduits of light and energy to flow through us. And similarly, the Kabbalistic system is a process of elevating our consciousness, which is our connection, from the root, the physical, to the endless. And it's not that endless is better than the physical. It's just a more expanded state. So there's nothing wrong. There's no wrong or right. It's just how we connect, how we expand, where we're moving from. If we're existing solely in the physical, then we're existing often in the reactive aspect of life. We're not in control. We're just responding to stimuli. We're responding to the physical dimensions, right? If we're moving from the higher aspects of self, that we're more we're the cause of life. We become connected to the seed aspect of where all energy is moving from, which is what we infuse into every aspect of our personal lives. So what we experience in the physical world is really the effect of life moving through us. If we're able to elevate and expand, we become connected to cause, which is source. So the idea is the more we expand our own personal consciousness, the more we connect to the essence of source, of light, of the purest channels of light, and are able to expand our perception to see how everything is divinely aligned or divinely in flow. And being in that state also gives us this beautiful experience of life moving through us. So we become connected to this energy, this channel of energy. We always are, but what we don't perceive it. We can't experience it because we're caught up in the limited aspect of self, which is the physical, which is the ego, which is the reflected reality. And so these tools are really ways, gateways, channels, keys to bring us into that connection, help us expand, help us perceive, help us awaken, help us purify and cleanse. Because by cleansing, by purifying, we're able to make more power. Everything is really just pointing back to the same concept. And yeah, moving from the heart, which is moving from this non-dual state, because it's heart is beyond mind. Mind is existing in perception and separation. Heart exists in unity. So this journey of moving from mind to heart is the journey of unity, which is really the ultimate experience of life. And also the closest we come to a unity consciousness, right? And in that state, we experience the one, which is really the purpose of everything. I want to touch on a few things you said. You talk about hell realms. I think these are frightening ideas for people, and I think it's to demystify what a hell realm is. A Kabbalist once said the hell is really just there's different ways of expressing it, and for me, there's the most right. Hell is a disconnect from source, and if we're not in the light, when we're not in the light, we're in our minds, and when we're in our minds, we're usually in some kind of loop, past played out narrative, something that is looping, that is quite triggering or traumatic. Otherwise, and so that's kind of, we create our own personal hell by being locked into our limited realities, and that plays out as some kind of disconnect. And when we're disconnected from light, we're in the story of I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I haven't succeeded, whatever story we have. And usually the stories, we all share similar stories about failure, regret, sadness, guilt, shame, pain, anger, jealousy, pride, fear. Like these dimensions to me are the hellish dimensions. And because in those states, we're in the limited aspect of self, contracted. And that's hellish, and it's an energy. So if you talk about kind of going to hell, you're just kind of like existing in that energetic field, and that energetic field can feel hellish, right? But it's just an energetic experience. This idea, let's remove the pictures of it. And you talk about visualization, right? Well, let's just take away the kind of the old Christian images of burning hell, of like people screaming in torture. It's really, it's like an energy. It's just that, and energies can be moved. A Kabbalist talks about hell being the place that people, it's remove even the concept of person. So I like this idea because it was like every soul, every individual has within them the capacity to change the world. We have all this incredible like light that we can reveal. Every person has gifts to reveal, a soul to something to reveal through their soul, and a purpose. And each purpose, each individual's potential is to transform humanity, elevate humanity from suffering. Now, mm-hmm. when we die, we're shown kind of what we achieved with our life and the distance between what we achieved and what our soul potential was, right? The potential of what we were here to reveal in this lifetime and what we actually revealed in our lifetime. And the distance between what we actually revealed and what we could have revealed, what our true potential is, which you see, which is endless actually, is hellish, because it's the sadness, the pain of not fulfilling that soul mission. And everyone, from a Kabbalist, every Kabbalist also talk about reincarnation and also as well as the Buddhists, this idea that we keep coming back until we kind of complete our soul mission here, which then means that we've also corrected our karmic. We've moved through the karmic cycles. We're off the wheel, right? And the idea that you can come back as an animal or a mineral or like a plant or a vegetable, I mean, this is not an area of that's not an area of my real expertise, like how people reincarnated and why they reincarnated in these different physical, I don't know, like, from the little that I know, I see it as something that every soul comes back and plays out these karmic cycles until they have corrected their life's the soul mission, which mm-hmm. is usually a correction. And everything that we experience is really a process of correction. What comes into our reality, the painful experiences we have, is a chance to transform something, to break something. And when you start to perceive, you start to realize that all of life is really an opportunity to transform and correct this karmic wheel.
So touching back on something you said a little while ago as well, about it's all to do with being stuck in our own mind, thinking we're worthless, thinking we're not worthy, that we're, for example, ugly or we don't feel like what life gives.
We're not good enough.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't feel good enough, right?
So one of the things I like to touch on being a younger person is that social media...
Younger than who?
I didn't mean it like that, but what I meant was like as
young... So you're an old man.
No, I didn't mean that whatsoever. But what I'm saying is as the younger generation, let's put it that way, comes in, there's a lot more social media and a lot more...
Pressure,
yeah. So what's your...
Through comparison.
Yeah. Really. So I like... This is one subject I like to bring up, is what do you think and how do you feel that social media is affecting that sort of thing of us being locked into our minds and not being nearer the light and all that sort of thing? How is it either pulling us away or can it be used in such a way that it could bring us forwards or towards the light?
Well, I think it's a really good point that you make, and I feel it's something that plagues everyone, right? This comparison game that happens through social media, that we're often bombarded with information about a number of different things, and we get pulled into stories, and being pulled into those stories naturally brings up this comparison we see, and then it brings up kind of feelings that, you know, I think you see all these people living their best lives on social media, right? Which has been beautifully orchestrated. That's really triggering because it's worse than advertising. Because once upon a time, it was only that you'd have to buy magazines or you watch the news. Now it's everywhere. Wherever you go, there's people promoting their best lives. And if we are all honest with ourselves, like when we promote our best lives, it's usually exactly that's promotion. We're promoting an image. We're pushing forwards an idea. Now, everyone's playing that game because everyone, no one wants to, it's no one wants to miss out, right? It's, we move as like a pack mentality. So everyone's playing the game of like, I want to show my best life. Everyone's going to continuously invest more time into presenting this image because we think that is going to bring us closer to fulfillment, happiness, acceptance, love, connection. And what we're really seeking is connection, right? We're deeply seeking connection and love. And the pure, but the, we're seeking the purest expression of that. And the purest expression of that that can ever really be found is the sensation in the physical, is a sensation you might have felt in your mother's womb as an embryo, locked in like a sack floating around, like surrounded by mother, loved, held, nurtured, and fed, and pure, without any kind of influence, with any kind of image in your mind. Now imagine that purest state and that potential, that human potential, and also a remembering of what we know is to be the safest place. Now, if you're not connected to spirit or soul, that's probably the closest that the mind can ever get to imagining what the potential for the human condition is, and ultimately what we're all seeking. When we talk about love, what are we seeking in love? We're seeking that safety. We're seeking that fullness, that connection. But it's distorted through all its different lenses, let's say. And one of the biggest distortions is social media. And so finding a way to see more clearly, and that's, again, awakening our perception, ability to see, to see truth, to perceive beyond the realm of the five senses, beyond the limited aspect. We see very clearly the game that everyone is playing, that we don't have to become a victim of if we're able to pull back from that game. And everyone's playing the same game, and it's causing us all emotional and mental trauma, actually.
So do you think that it could ever be used in a... So that's right. Do you think it could ever be used in a good way? For example, so let's bring up the biggest platform at the moment, which is TikTok. Now, there's two ways... For some reason, I find there's two ways TikTok goes. You can go the real sort of side where you see all the craziness of all the dancers, all of the... cosplayers, all of the things, but then for some reason there's a complete swap on TikTok where actually you can see some real mindfulness stuff going on, because I follow a few people that do really sweet quotes. Some of them do like they say like you're worth it, like tell you how much they don't even know you, but they're doing videos on how much they love you, how much they care for you.
Does that help? Do you find that helpful?
I personally do. Yeah. Sometimes it's useful because like I'm a person that meditates and a person that's had to look into mindfulness quite a bit. I've never suffered from mental illness myself, but I have family members that have done. And I have seen how much it affects them. And one of the quotes I like to go by, and this is from Jim Carrey, and he says that depression is deep rest. It's you kind of have like a persona that you're giving out, but when you get to a point where you can't deal with that image that you're giving people anymore, your body needs that deep rest.
Yeah, I like that too. It's something that I use a lot. Depressed is actually deep rest.
Yeah.
It's your body shutting down to reboot itself.
Mm.
And we have to honor the natural cycles of the body as well. Like it's if I've had my kind of dark nights of the soul where I literally went, I was living a particular way and that lifestyle wasn't sustainable. And I had to really kind of hit a personal rock bottom just to kind of find my connection and be like, what happens if I'm here? Right, actually, I'm held by life. It's okay to fall in the eyes of everyone else. It's okay to fail. It's okay to step outside of the system. It's okay. Like it's and then from this place, how can I build from a place of truth where I'm moving from my heart space, where I'm moving and building in a way that I'm connected to source and moving from that place and supported by that to ensure that the foundations of what I'm building are supported by life itself. And I wanted to find that place of trust, of safety in myself, to know that whatever happens, I can go back to a place which I know is fundamentally connected to life and truth and source, let's say, which is a kind of bit abstract concepts from a lot of people, because we're talking about experiences of the heart, of the soul, right? Something beyond the physical. And that's my go-to safety net.
Yeah. So
I use these tools to connect it.
So it's like even with me myself. So like I said a little while ago, I've never suffered from mental issues. So I've never had anxiety, depression, all that
sort
of thing.
You're very fortunate, yeah. Very blessed.
But the one thing that I do get sometimes with me is I am what they call empathic. So I'm very good at knowing when somebody else is upset or when somebody else needs someone to talk to. And during the pandemic, this is why I had to look up what mindfulness was and how meditation helps and that sort of thing. Because even then, although I've never had all those things, I could sort of feel the way the world was reacting to the pandemic. And that did hit me. So it never put me in a depression or anything, but it did make me sad because I could feel everybody else's energy.
Sadness.
Yeah. And I seem to find as well, and I don't know if you found any correlations with this, but people that are empathic are usually the ones that sort of follow this practice and style, because they sort of have to, in a way, learn how to
work with the world and interact, yeah, and become very, very tuned into the, yeah, subtle fluctuations of energy and energy exchange. So when you're empathy, you're feeling everything deeply. You're like, wow, I walk into a room, I feel it. I feel the light, I feel the darkness, I feel the heaviness, I feel the joy. If someone's crying or sad, I'm going to feel it. I will move it through me. It's a massive gift. But if you don't understand that
you
are connected in this way, it can become quite traumatic for you because you're overloaded with all of these stimuli around you. And most healers or light workers are deeply empathetic, actually. You also had a fly. Huh? I've just got one that's sitting on my computer. Very annoying. I also am empathetic. And I also feel things deeply. And sometimes that's a blessing and sometimes it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because if holding people, holding that energy, and if I'm not, and you can build, but the process actually, from my understanding, is to build a vessel, a capacity to hold that energy.
Yeah.
And the more we do this inner work, the more we kind of really connect, the more we're actually able to hold others in their sadness, in their pain, to allow them to move through those emotions, because you're able to handle those experiences energetically.
Yeah.
And so you become a channel for a lot of people moving that energy through. Really, that's how we support each other with communities. The healthiest way to support each other, really.
Yeah.
It's holding space.
Well, I personally, and I don't know if you meditate at all, but me personally, I seem to find the way to sort of channel that myself and to learn to deal with it and things is through sometimes, like the other day, I just fell into a meditation and didn't realise I did it for 4 hours until my brother walked through the door at home. I just fell straight into it. But and that was what I was going to ask you as well. What is your feelings on mindfulness and meditation? How do you think that helps in day-to-day life for everybody, but also in what you do with your research and the VR that you're creating?
It's wonderful to drop in to the self and to drop into stuff. I mean, right now, if I close my eyes, I could just I could sink into a nice expanded state, and it feels very, you have very nice energy, very soft energy, actually. And that's really lovely. And with VR, VR is also a technology of empathy because it enables us to connect through our avatars, through virtual worlds, to be immersed in something, transported somewhere, experience things. We used to create sensory experiences, which were not just audiovisual, but connected to the other sense of smell, touch, and taste, measuring biometric feedback. And there were lots of experiences that were connected to people to resolving traumas like PTSD and mental health issues. So we were experimenting with VR and trauma and mental health and disability. And we were exploring with trying to recreate psychedelic experiences in virtual reality. And there was an ayahuasca experience which we recreated. So people were journeying through the mind and journeying through all the dimensions of mind in VR to try and give people a taste of what that experience is like. Always difficult because VR is still a new toy. Exactly, an interface in which you're experiencing through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen some really interesting things done with VR and trauma, and that is a way of unraveling traumas. Like, yeah.
So so I've only ever used VR once, and it was a friend of mine, and I believe it was not the Oculus Rift, it was the other Vive, that was it. So we were using the Vive because he was like on Steam and stuff, and we were using VR chat, and one of the things, and me being a person that was always interested in mindfulness and meditation before the pandemic, I just never did much research on it until during. We actually did a campfire session. So we sat in VR chat, and we actually had this monk that was on with us. And this is where I found it really strange, because I didn't think a monk would have a VR headset, but he was into gaming and loved. So we were chatting with him, and he also did a campfire session where he'd just sit there with people. Sometimes it was in silence. Sometimes he'd do a little sing song. Other times he would literally would get out the fake s'mores and have a little burning fire. But it was but that connection. It was really strange because VR gives you the biggest connection, because I actually felt like I was in a campfire with almost 1,000 people in this room, but I was just sitting on my own in my own room. But all that connection felt absolutely...
You felt it.
Yeah, you felt... Yeah. It's
you felt it. Wow.
Yeah, and it feels really weird because, like I say, you're in your room on your own, but how the brain interprets what you're seeing kind of makes you feel like you're somewhere else.
See, I we do a lot of campfires here in Portugal, so then I'm always... The real thing is always a bit better. It's always better to actually be around a campfire, because you get the real smoke and the feelings. And VR, you still are synthetic. But saying that, if you're in your room and you have that, it's definitely already a huge leap towards having that experience. Ultimately, better to be around a campfire with a bunch of people.
Oh yeah,
then always. Yeah, so if you can do that, be in the campfire. If you can't, beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful that you can share that, and it was so enriching for you and visceral as well.
Yeah.
Really.
So going back to what you do in VR again. So you were saying you were doing some experiences in VR that could help you relax or give you some, like, almost, and I'm going to use the term hippy dippy sort of experiences. Could you
psychedelic?
Sorry, that's the word I was looking for. Psychedelic.
I like hippy dippy.
Yeah. So could you expand that a little bit more? So how does that work exactly, or and how did you get into doing this as well?
Well, how it works. So, for example, there was an experience which was to help soldiers deal with PTSD. Let's say a soldier was in Afghanistan and he steps on a landmine. His leg gets blown off, sort of an experience was done, and he wakes up in the hospital and he keeps reliving that trauma because it becomes so embedded in his neurology. He's reliving over and over again this traumatic moment in his mind. He can't break out of it because it's just so intense. It kind of becomes all, I don't know if you've ever been stuck in a mind loop with something that happened to you, or like an experience that was so overwhelming or traumatic that actually you get caught up in a story over it and you can't get out of that story, and that actually starts to shape your neurology. It's happened to me and it's really horrible.
I know that one. Yeah.
And it's devastating when you're caught up because you want to get over it, but you can't because you're kind of, it's almost like you've experienced a trauma for yourself and you get locked in it. So VR is for something like a guy who's been to war. We recreated the experience of that moment when he gets blown up in VR. And in that process, you soften it. You're constantly softening the edges of it. You're softening the experience from being really overwhelming to gently almost making it accessible, acceptable and processable by playing it, but in a soft, slightly just constantly tweaking the feeling so the explosion isn't so intense. And over time, you're softening the edges of the experience, the bomb, the colors, and it becomes less and less traumatic. And it's an experiment because it's like, what happens if we soften the experience so the mind can move through it? Every time it relives it in a softer way. And you're literally retraining the brain to perceive the experience in a way that wasn't so overwhelming or terrifying. And something similar with people with dementia, but autism. It's giving people with autism a softer reality. So you're making the world much more colorful, much more playful. So it's almost like a gentle support into dealing with the life, which sometimes can be over stimulating. People with autism are overwhelmed by the world around them because it's too much of a sensory overload. So by almost cushioning life, cushioning reality, making everything soft and gentle, you're enabling them to start to become more comfortable with the reality as it is, because you're supporting those steps. It's like riding a bicycle but with three wheels, you know?
It
makes things that little bit more easy. So let's just think one of the ways that we're experimenting with the technology to support different, and there are many people doing many different things.
Yeah,
as well.
Well, I'm ASD myself, so I know when you were talking about autism, I know exactly what you meant there, because so basically with mine, I will react if there's too many sounds around me. But I'm slightly better than the average autistic person, but still under the scale of I'm going to use the word normal here in context, but as a normal person, you can deal with a lot more frequencies than I can, but I'm slightly, but I say better than the average autistic person. And then
can I reframe that?
Yeah.
I see autism as kind of a magical superpower. Because I think it's like you've got your heightened sense. You're almost like you're a superhero who hasn't learned to control these superpowers. And life says, you're talking about normal people. And it's like, and everyone kind of goes, normal. But normal for me is like, you don't want to be normal.
No
one wants to be. Like, why would you? If you've got these senses, you have heightened sense, heightened empathy, heightened visual or auditory kind of perception, that's amazing. Right. And most autistic people experience life in its fullness, but are overwhelmed with that experience and they haven't learned how to process it. And no one's taught them a way to. So you're given a pill and you're told to sit over there and you're told that you're not normal.
Yep.
Normal is seeing a kind of almost a dulled version of life. Let's give you a pill to dull your senses.
Yeah. Well, so you've
got magical senses. You're experiencing the fullness of life, the richness, the totality of experience.
Yeah, well, it's like my goddaughter, she is Asperger's, and so she's quite severe, but she can talk and everything else, but again, she needs to be wearing the headphones all the time. But learning meditation and mindfulness, I've tried with her, she won't sit long enough, but I have tried to do what I found this thing called child meditations, and they're like little basic things you can do where you can just sit them down for 5 minutes, even when they're eating and stuff, and you get them to do just a little relaxed breathing, and it's nothing major. But what I've noticed is since I've been doing that with her, she's been a lot calmer, and actually she takes off the headset sometimes now, which. And this is why I try and preach mindfulness and meditation to people and spirituality, because like without it, some of us aren't gonna do well in life because of all the we hate ourselves, all this PTSD or other traumas that you've had in your life that in nowadays sort of sit there and trapped in people's minds. So, and that's where I love, like you, when you're talking about the work you do with VR, that is absolutely perfect because you've got the mental side of it, and then you've got the visual side that you're giving, and then and the auditory side, and it just seems like if you put that all together in one little practice, you could probably almost have. Let's go back to the modern Buddha I was reading. They would talk about the Dharma, and in their version, they talk about like not allowing emotion to take over, not allowing your thoughts, your physical body to control your mental capacity, as in letting what you see and what you do tell the mind that you're not worth it, that you're not thing, and all of that together, you could probably have the modern Buddhist, because you could do it in a vision. You go.
Sorry to carry. I
Okay.
think what you just said was really interesting. You're saying that you tell the mind that you're nothing. You said nothing, or like you're worthless, you know. But then, what was the Buddha way? Buddha is
So,
to be no thing. Like we see that as a detriment, an insult. You're nothing. You're no thing. If you Buddha, he was striving to be nothing. He was striving to be no thing, because in that pursuit, when one releases every story and they are no longer anything, they're no thing. If you're no thing, that means you're connected to everything. So it's the paradox. And actually, the greatest spiritual avatars that ever walked the planet were no thing. Jesus was nothing. He had no identity. Buddha, Krishna, they were no thing. They were nothing, but therefore they were connected to everything. They'd remove the individual from the process.
But then to do that in the modern age, I seem to think. And after what I was when I was reading some of the PDF that was given to me, and stuff as well, and what you were doing, the and I seem to think in the modern age you may need your technology to get there, and
Possibly,
we may need people like myself who have studied a little bit of and yourself spirituality, mindfulness, meditation, and put all those practices together. So that we can relax the mind to a point where it's like we find nirvana. We eventually get there and nirvana's in front of us.
Or we are it. We realize that it was there the whole time.
But it's that sort of thing of because people rely on technology so much now, we may have to sort of train them to pick up the right technology. So rather than going to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok and all that sort of thing, you sort of send them to places like the VR world that you've created, or you send them to like I use an app on my phone called Medito. It's a 100% free meditation app that teaches you. So it starts off by teaching you how to practice, how to sit, how to do the breathing exercises, how to, and then it gives you a 30 day course you can follow that, like you do it every single day, and it teaches you a basic meditation each day. And then within the app, you've got different meditations you can do. So it's got pain meditation, breathing meditations, grief meditations,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's done by a non-profit foundation called the Medito Foundation, and they run this completely free with all volunteers. So in my case, I'm what they call their beta tester. So when they come out with new features, I will see that before most test that out for them. But it's one of the best ways I've found to do meditation, because it even just has a simple little timer on there for you. So you can do your own meditation, just lets you know when to start and end. So you don't go overdo it, but then you're not underdoing it at the same time. And they're the sort of things I'd love to, and this is why I try and do my mindfulness on YouTube and my podcast and my blog, along with my photography and video editing business.
Amazing.
But I like to push people that way. So talking to
Of
people
course.
like yourself is the way I'd like people to go, and the best medium to do that sometimes is by just chatting like we're doing, and having that conversation I think people should be having.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Nice one.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
Cool.
is so before so we're gonna wrap it up here, because it looks like the time has just come up for Zoom. So, is there anything you would like to add before we go?
An app to look out for that we worked on was called Maya. I was thinking about it. So Maya, it was like mindfulness and electronic music. It's quite nice, something to dance to as well. So how can you bring the mindfulness element into partying and connecting socially? So not that, and you're not alone. You can all like ecstatic dance. You can, and without alcohol and without drugs, you can find places that you can meet socially. And this app is a great one that I was involved with called Maya. It's MEYA, and I'm just checking to see if there's something. And I think it's a great way to bring mindfulness into, it's called Beyond Meditation, into the social scene, to connecting. And then you can all connect on the dance floor in a meditative way, but actually elevate and expand into the music at the same time. So suddenly you're like, you're heightened in, like, it doesn't always have to be zen. It can also be really fun. It can be really alive. It can be really energized. And you want to be moving and sharing that energy and connecting in that place as well. And that I feel is also, and because it's different states we can explore together.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it here. It's been absolutely fantastic to talk to you, and I'd love to do it again sometime if you have anything new.
Course.
And then I'll get all the links and stuff off of you, and we'll put that on the description of YouTube and all the rest of the places. And fantastic interview. Thank you very much. I've been Michael Burgess. This is the What's Up podcast, and I'll see you guys in the next one.